Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Red Sox Digest Live, where the bullpen's allergic to clean innings and Citizens Bank Park is officially a house of horrors. My name is Jim Delfino, and I am your host for this evening. I am joined today by Nick Face, who's got takes hotter than a midsummer Fenway bleacher seat, yet somehow colder than the Sox offense with runners on third. Listening to Nick is like watching a reliever warm up. It's chaotic, it's loud, and you're not sure it's helping, but you can't look away. I'm also joined tonight with Thayer Doyle. Thayer's sarcasm is so sharp, it has its own war stat, and it's negative. He's the only guy who can make a walk-off win sound like jury duty. If dry humor were a moisture level, Thayer would be classified as desert wind. He once got mistaken for a Philly fan just from the tone of his sigh, and his optimism, rumored to exist, last seen in the David Ortiz era. The Boston Red Sox are now 55-49 on the season. They exploded for six runs in the fifth, walks, chaos, and a Romy Gonzalez grand slam. They had Philly fans checking their blood pressure. But after that, it was crickets. Not a single run until the 10th, when Trevor Story doubled in Duran to give Boston a flicker of hope. And then Kyle Schwarber happened again. Then, in the top of the 11th, Mr. Interference himself hit a two-run laser to left field to give the Red Sox a 9-7 victory over the Phillies. Let's talk pitching. Lucas Giolito gave up four runs of Please Don't Look at My ERA, while the bullpen played hot potato with the lead. Meanwhile, the Phillies got four home runs from Harper, Schwarber, Castellanos, and Stott, like they were auditioning for next year's home run derby. As always, let's get into it. Thayer, I'd like to start with your initial takes and reactions.
Well, I originally said it was going to be 2 out of 3 in the Red Sox favor. We were looking like it was going to be possible before Narvaez, or actually really before Hicks got into us on Monday. We should have taken 2 out of 3 from this team. They are very similar to us. Their bullpen is very, very weak. They have a few offensive-minded players in the top of their lineup. The bottom of their lineup is not necessarily the best. Really, the difference was Wheeler and Sanchez. Those were his performance yesterday was outstanding. We just couldn't hit him. I have to say that I am pleased in the fact that the Red Sox bounced back today. They very easily could have just rolled over and just taken it right on the chin, and this game could have been 10-0 instead of what we saw. So a credit to them for not rolling over. Granted, it did take sort of an effort from God to walk half the ballpark and then lay the change up right down the middle to Romy, but they allowed it. They were patient in some of their bats, so that's a positive. Now, we talked about this massive series with dealing with the Cubs, dealing with the Phillies, and then the Dodgers. We have to take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. Thankfully, Nick, they won today, so maybe they're not going to be coming in for blood.
Nick, your initial reactions to tonight's victory.
Well, I want to give you the victory first, Jim, on that Emmy Award-winning opening for the both of us right there. I mean, that's a round of applause right there on that. That is the best one that's been done yet. So take a bow there, sir.
Thank you very little.
Welcome. I have to say, I am not I don't like to be a negative person. I don't. I'm a very reactionary type of – don't give me that look. I'm a very reactionary kind of guy. As we're talking, if you're in the chat, it became 5-0 at one point. I said, I'm out. I'm going to take a walk. I had to clear my head because I was just like, here we go. It's going to get a sweep. And then I walked away for a little bit. And then my phone started going off. Look at Romy. Look what he did. Grand slam. We took the lead. And I said, what? What? What just happened? A little luck came the Red Sox way. And we snuck out the victory here tonight. Does it change how I feel about this team right now? No. When you strike out 16 times a game, when your leadoff batter, who really wasn't your leadoff batter tonight because there was a lefty going, so you had to drop him down, strikes out four times a night. When you have guys that are up there just trying to torpedo the baseball at every opportunity to launch home runs left and right, I question how this is sustainable. Sustainable is the lead word here of the night for me. This very well could have been a three-game sweep. Three-game sweep for the Phillies. I give Carlos Navarez a lot of credit for that tomahawked home run in the 11th to give the Red Sox the 9th lead at the time. He's been under a lot of criticism. I have been one of those people who has called him out quite bluntly on laziness, not knowing the situation, the catcher's interferences, all that. If there's anything that I enjoy more is winning. I enjoy winning and I like seeing the team produce when they do. But it's for me to get sometimes be wrong. And wrong for the good. Meaning the team is going to come out and win, or a player comes out of their slump and does something meaningful and productive to win a game or to get them into a stage where they're going to be okay. So you know what? Carlos Navarez, credit to you, sir. You silenced critics like myself. You got the job done tonight, and you've made me feel a little bit better tonight about at least having somewhat confidence in our catching situation here for the Red Sox. I'm still stunned. We pulled this out, but we'll take every win that we can.
Yeah, we have to scratch and claw for every one of these, especially against good competition. You know, it's very hard to be happy about taking one out of three from the Phillies and one out of three from the Cubs. I mean, obviously it could be worse and we could have gotten swept, but, you know, this was a hard win. And I mean, the thing about Narvaez, you know, he obviously was able to shake off a lot of that and kind of didn't let a lot of this get to him emotionally or impact his game. You know, he had a great game. He had the game-winning home run. I still like him. I still think he's one of my favorite players on this roster. And, you know, I think the biggest issue is, and we've all been in agreement, is his overuse and the fact that we don't have a backup catcher. I mean, at this point, I would just have Romy Gonzalez play catcher if I had to. I mean, it's really that bad. Connor Wong, you know, we've talked a million times, gives you nothing. And Cora knows it. You know, there's no way that he's going to, you know, pinch hit for Narvaez, pinch run. You can't do it because you can't bring Wong into that game. And it's not even a matter of Wong not being good offensively. He's also pathetic defensively. And that's really where you don't have what should be a quality catcher defensively as your backup. You know, typically you might have your primary catcher be more of an offensive guy and your backup being the mostly a defensive guy. Whatever he gives you offensively is just, you know, buttering your bread, a gift, you know. In this situation, you can't do that. So it makes it tough. Like I said, I'm a big Narvaez fan. I just hope he doesn't, you know, wear out too quickly. And hopefully at this deadline, we can get, you know, maybe another catcher. Since Nick was talking a lot about him, I'll give you the next mic. Talk to me about Narvaez, your thoughts on him tonight.
I thought it was positive signs. He has had a really difficult last couple days where, to his fault or not to his fault, I will hold Mondays against him a little bit more than yesterday's. Yesterday's with the runner coming home, that interference, it's just natural instincts to try to get out there earlier than later. That's more on Richard Fitz for going from the windup with a man on third base. But it was clear yesterday that Philadelphia was picking on him. They were doing everything they can. Everybody was running because they knew that he had to have it in the back of his mind that he needed to stay back. So he has been struggling. But again, to his credit today, he had the extra base hit. He had the home run. He did a nice job behind the plate. It showed a lot of mental fortitude for him to stay in there, to be positive, and not to just sort of lay down and die. So that's a good sign. I think that's a positive that we have a catcher who's mentally involved, who's going to be fine. The physical part, he's wearing down. There's no question about it. It's been a very hot summer. He's caught a lot more games than he's used to. he's going to wear down and he's not going to be nearly as productive this year. Moving forward, however, I think it's a positive sign for the player that we're going to have in the future.
Moving right along to the starting rotation, I had made mention in, I think, yesterday's episode that, you know, be it the record, we've been getting some decent starting pitching. I mean, I know, again, we had some really early signs of heart attacks, but then the starters kind of worked it through and actually had what could be considered quality starts. Today was a different animal. Lucas Giolito, obviously, with a stinker. I mean, again, you know, it was kind of reminded me a little bit of that Toronto game, I think, up in Canada. Four innings tonight, six hits, five earned runs, four home runs allowed. Nick, take me through Giolito, and is it proof now more than ever that we need a number two starter?
I don't know if I really want to go through that again, Jim. I mean, he ended my watching of the game. I'm going to be blunt as heck on this. He did. It was pathetic. It was an absolute dog crap performance from Giolito. He had hit me tattooed on every friggin' pitch that was getting delivered, and he wasn't fooling anybody at Citizens Bank Park. It was tee time. Tee off. And they were going yard, big time. Why it was like that? That's a good question. If you look at the makeup of how he was on the mound, I think this has to be chalked up to location. Everything that he was throwing wasn't hitting corners. It was down the pipe. It was right there screaming, hit me, get out of the ballpark, it's time to party. As Dennis Eckersley famously said back in 2018. Well, the Phillies, quite frankly, had a party, at least early on in this game, because, I mean, the Red Sox had no business, I mean, getting back into this game. I mean, the Phillies had them pretty much dead, and Giolito was lucky. He doesn't get a loss for this, guys. That's the most stunning thing, that this team was able to find the fortitude to figure out how they could get the job done and win this game. That's the biggest statement, could be win, that they've had at least right now, because they were done. They will lay them out for roadkill. Not to be disgusting, but that's what it was. And they got themselves back into the game. So this does change my perception, though, on what we need. This is the thing with Giolito. He's such a wild card. I think you guys would agree on that, too. You don't know sometimes what you're going to get. We were on a good stretch there where we played far less superior teams. So he's going to beat upon those teams pretty well. The struggle here is figuring out what is he? Where does he slot in? I think I feel most comfortable with him as a 3 or 4. But the problem here, you have Bayo, who we don't really want to put that number two name onto him right now. And Walker Buehler just came off a gem this past Monday. I'm not sliding him anywhere. He's my five guy. So you desperately do need a number two starter. And what they're going to go out and get right now, I just don't know, guys, if this team and this organization is going to go and get that number two starter with the resources that they have. I mean, case in point, if you're going to go out and get a number two, you aren't going to get anything more than a bag of big league chew for Jarren Duran. So all you people out there that are continuing to harp on, oh, we're just going to put Duran in for the Twins. Duran can go to the Padres for this great, you know, for Dylan Cease, or he can go to the Twins for Joe Ryan. What are you people smoking? Like, where is the sense of reality with some of these people? Oh, we're just going to throw Duran. Let's just put Willy Abreu. If one of these teams gladly wants to take Jarren Duran off the hands of the Red Sox, I'll go get a duck boat right now, and we'll go celebrate, and I'll go take a ride around town. Because it's insanity for a Major League Baseball team. Oh, he's got speed. Oh, he can lead off. He can do this. This season? You kidding me? So that's my stance on at least the Giolito and the pitching front. It's just going to be a matter of what price are you going to pay?
So my take on this has been pretty clear. The question you have to answer, and this is really for Red Sox ownership and management, do you want to win? Do you want to win? Because Breslow has been quoted as saying in the offseason that, quote, you know, we owed it to our fans to improve our ball club. So are you just going ahead and appeasing us by getting one, two, or three pieces to add to this, you know, this roster? Or are you trying to actually win a division or a championship? This whole slide into the wild card business is just a bunch of smoke and mirrors to me. And frankly, since we've had the third wild card, you know, shocking news, folks, the Red Sox haven't qualified for the wild card since it's been in existence. So as shitty as you need to be to get in and slide in as a third wild card, they can't even be that good. Which leads me again to the most important move they can make, in my opinion, would be a number two starter or finding a number one B starter. Something that would slot in right behind Crochet and as a result of that, push everybody down the line so that your Bayos of the world and so forth are number threes, number fours, and so on and so forth. A backup catcher is certainly on my wish list, and maybe a right-handed bat. Now, you may say to me, well, that's really too much to ask for. And if you asked me that, I would tell you you're right. But if you want to win, and if you want to make sure as much as you possibly can to get into that postseason, that's what you need to do. And the other thing I want to point out as far as my right-handed bat, if Alex Bregman cannot play every day, is it because he can't play in the field? Because he can't run? What is the answer with Alex Bregman, where he's playing one game and then two games off and pinch hitting? If that's the case, and it really boils down to the fact that he can't play the field, then I think you need to DH him. We need three or four or five at-bats a night from him, because this offense is not sustainable without a bat like his. So that's where I stand with that. I want to move on to my next topic, and this is for Thayer. As far as our bullpen is concerned, Justin Wilson has been looking really good, very quietly for this team all season. You know, he was brought in here. His career has been okay. But outside of Chapman, I would say he's been our number two reliever. In July, two innings pitched. Two and two-thirds innings, excuse me. Two hits, one earned run, two walks. Thayer, take me through what you've been seeing from Wilson, and are you a believer?
I think Wilson's been doing a very nice job. I think Cora has been using him intentionally, which is important. He's not just bringing him in like Bernardino to get everybody out. He's using Wilson as more of a left-handed weapon when he has the opportunity to get the lefties out, like we saw today when Schorber was coming up, when Harper was coming up. Use him to get those guys. That's where he's been his most effective. He has the opportunity to attack people with his fastball, which is really important. And I think that's what's making his off-speed pitches that much more reliable. To your initial comment, I would still say he's probably the third. I still think Whitlock is your second best reliever out of the bullpen behind Chapman. But I think Wilson is definitely your second most reliable lefty, without question.
Nick, I'd like to pose the same question to you. What's your thoughts on Justin Wilson? Are you a believer? I put a tweet out today about my three relievers that I trust. It's kind of a joke. It was handwritten, and it was Chapman, Wilson, and Whitlock. What are your thoughts on that?
The only thing that I'd change here is Justin Wilson's my number three in the circle of trust. Garrett Whitlock has shown me since the adaption of him going one inning, he has gotten way back into my fully trust mode. I'm there with him. You're seeing a guy who's healthy in Whitlock right now. You're seeing a guy who can command the zone and a guy who's trusting his stuff. And I think we're finally figuring out here what Garrett Whitlock's role is long term.
He's a really
one inning guy. That's it.
Yep.
That's what it is. So that's helped this season, as frustrating as it's been. That's one of the bright spots that we're figuring out here is that Garrett Whitlock has a role now, and he's excelling in a role and staying healthy. That's great. Knock on wood, that continues. But the story here on Justin Wilson is that he's given the Red Sox a guy that nobody on their bingo card at the beginning of this season would have said, what, Justin Wilson? You're going to put Justin Wilson in these high-leverage spots and get the job done? Wow. And it's been one of those situations where Cora's now getting into that seventh inning, sixth inning if needed, putting him in against those tough lefties to get the job done. I'm not 100% there with the righties, just because matchup based with him being a lefty, I want to see him face those type of batters. But I will say it gives you another weapon that's in the pen that you have semi-trust with. And that's not something that you can say quite frequently here with guys, you know, like Weissert. You know, I will give Weissert a little bit of credit here tonight. It was one run that was given up, but hey, I think we were all saying, oh, the game's over. Here comes Weissert. Game's done, especially with that cream of the crop lineup coming up. And they were able to figure out a way to continue the game. So that was a plus. Ocala, I'm not there yet. I mean, look what Cora did tonight. He took him out with two outs. He gave up the run. It was 9-8 at the time and went back to Bernardino. I think if we fully trusted Ocala, he would have had him finish the game, and he didn't. So that's kind of where we're at. You know, Murphy got beat up on this road trip against the I think it was against the Cubs, right, that Saturday game. So that definitely bopped him down quite a bit. Are we forgetting anybody else?
That's about the major guys.
Isaiah Campbell is our future future closer, definitely.
He's not DFA'd yet. So everybody knows that listens to anything I say or reads anything I say. I'm not a really big Alex Cora fan. I haven't been since basically 2019. Don't think he's a really great manager. It's just my opinion. I think that probably a chipmunk could have won in 2018. Dave Dombrowski gave him a great team. And one of the things that we brought up today was Alex Cora, for giving him a little bit of credit, which I rarely do. He had a pretty good, Theriot mentioned it, he had a pretty good series. And when you look at his manipulation of the bullpen, especially with Chapman, bringing him into the highest leverage situations in late innings, not necessarily always the ninth, was a pretty shrewd and smart managing decision. So I want to start with you, Ther. What are your thoughts on Cora in this series and even overall?
I thought he did a really nice job this series. And I got to say, really, since we sort of came back from the break, the manipulation that he's been doing with Chapman, like you talked about, how he's been able to use Whitlock in situations, I really thought he's done a very intelligent job of that. And even with this pinch hitting, bringing in Bregman for the pinch hit home run, using him today, doing things beyond the normal, which is important for him. He's starting to get creative again, which I think is important. And also, to his credit, he has allowed the starters, especially since they've been getting hit early on, he's been giving them a little bit more leeway, getting them a little later in the games, where I think earlier in the season, especially after what we saw with the Cubs series, after getting hammered in the first two innings, he might have pulled those guys earlier than he did, and that was causing a lot of strife within the bullpen. He allowed him to go 5-6. We saw that, you know, Giolito and Bayo almost got quality starts. Granted, Fitz didn't really have it yesterday, but Fitz got him a little deeper than he probably could have. Giolito today, he held on to him as long as he possibly could, to the point where he didn't even get the loss. He went, I think he got through five today, I believe. So Cora, I think, is doing a nice job, again, of being creative and starting to try to make stuff happen. He's still not quite to where he was. And granted, 18, he had an incredible team, but he was pulling all the strings, and you just saw it on his face that he really enjoyed the challenge of, oh, who am I going to put in today? Because it sort of got to that point where, oh, look, it's Devers is going to start today instead of Nunez, and Devers would hit a home run. And, oh, tomorrow I'm going to start Nunez. It doesn't matter that he's 0 for 15 against a starter. He's like, and then Nunez would reward him by going like 2 for 3. So he had his finger on the pulse of those players where they would do a lot of things for him. Hopefully he can get back to that this year.
I want to finish off talking about the upcoming series with the Dodgers. We are back in Fenway Park to face the Dodgers over the weekend. Tomorrow is a day off. So on Friday, we have Brian Bello, and he is going against Emmett Sheehan. We have Saturday's game, also a night game. It's Garrett Crochet scheduled against Clayton Kershaw, who's been with the Dodgers for 37 years. And also on Sunday at 1:30, five-start Ferris Bueller against Shohei Ohtani. With that being said, I'd like to start with you, Nick. What is your thoughts for this upcoming series? What are your expectations, and what do the Red Sox need to do to stay in this July trade deadline race?
Well, this is going to get tough yet again, but I do think that one of the things going for the Red Sox is coming back home. We know that they are a better team than years past at home, especially where the winning streak really, really got the wins up. I want to say they're 34 and something at home or something so far, but it's very positive, which is a good thing. I actually look for Friday night to be a win for Bello. I do. I'm going to say that because I think the Red Sox are looking forward to coming home. It hasn't been in a while, a little bit over 2 weeks, especially now with the All-Star break. I think it's something that they're going to be looking forward to. The other thing, and I'm not sure if this is confirmed yet or not, but I heard prior to this game tonight for the Red Sox, Mookie Betts may be missing this series. I don't know if that's confirmed 100% yet, but I did hear something from Dave Roberts saying something's going on with him personally, and it's not likely that he's going to be playing. So that, I know Mookie's not having that great of a season, but I think some fans are looking forward to seeing him, and Mookie may have jumped at the possibility of coming back home and really wreaking havoc on a team that we all wish that Mookie was still here. So, and showing up John Henry and everybody for trading him. The other thing, I am not sure if Shohei Ohtani is actually going to be pitching Sunday. I heard another report about something going on with him and trying to manage his workload and figure out what they're doing there. So load management might be in play for Shohei. You're going to have to figure out the bat, of course. That's one of the bigger things there. I think Saturday could be a winnable game. I know, obviously, Clayton Kershaw is a stud. He's going to be a future Hall of Famer. But he's getting up there in age. And he definitely, as a lefty, that might be time for, you know, your Romy Gonzalez's or something to really shine in that game. Sunday, again, depending upon what the Dodgers do and all. I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say the Red Sox are going to take 2 or 3 from the Dodgers. Don't ask me why. Don't ask. I'm just going to say it. I feel it.
Fair, same question to you. Your reactions, and what are you looking for in this Dodgers series, and what is your expectations?
I think Crochet is the pivotal one. We have to win the Crochet start. I agree with Nick. Even though it's Kershaw, you know, he's not the same Kershaw. However, our right-handed lineup right now isn't firing like it was before. Granted, Romy had the home run today, but he was 0 for 21 leading up to it. Yep. Ref Snyder seems to be kind of getting exposed. And the other piece with Bregman getting a game off every series, who knows when he's going to be getting that time off and what he's going to be doing. So that's a little sort of issue. And also it depends on how bad the injury is going to be to Mayer. If Mayer's hurt, then that means you're sort of who's playing third base, who's playing first base is going to be altered. That could put both Toro and Romy on the corners. So second base, you're going to have to deal with having Rafaela in there again. Now Duran has to play all the time in center field. So you're going to have Duran facing the Dodgers all the time. So it's a long way of saying I agree with Nick, I think. I think the Sheehan game, they can get game one. I trust Bello. The Dodgers pitching staff is not very good. And, you know, especially if Betts doesn't come, just having him in that lineup makes it a little bit of a different story when you have to deal with the, even though it's not the same Betts as in the past, it's still Mookie Betts. So you have to be respectful as a pitcher and deal with that. So you have Betts, Ohtani, Freeman, you have Smith. You have Teoscar Hernandez out there. So they have a very powerful lineup, but I think coming home, I think the Red Sox will take two out of three because Crochet's going to get you one, Bayo's going to get you the other, and then Shohei will probably give you three innings to shut us down. But I think that might be the game where they actually score on us.
My take on this is going to be the following. I also agree with both of you that the Red Sox have a really good shot of winning two out of three. As far as – we'll start with the easiest of them all. I do this every time Crochet's in a series and we're talking. I like the odds of Crochet against Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw has a career record of 0-2 against the Boston Red Sox. This is combined regular and postseason play. He's 0-2 with a 7.36 ERA in 11 innings pitched. So he hasn't really had great success against the Red Sox in his career. So I like that matchup. I like the idea of Crochet against him and having our right-handed lineup with probably Romy and Refsnyder. And I think if you get a typical Crochet start, which is why I've talked about before, having good starting pitching, guys you can rely on, makes all the difference in the world. We should win that game. I like Bayo against Sheehan for a couple reasons. Sheehan, I see as a rookie. He's only got 16-some-odd innings in his career, and he's 1-1 with a 4.41. You know, I mean, obviously L.A. is a great market, but coming to Boston, he might have the jitters. I don't know, especially if our crowd can really get into it. And
well, the other thing, Jim, is this kid, Sheehan, is from Boston. He went to B.C.,
okay.
The emotions are probably going to be a lot for him to handle.
Right. And that could be good or it could be bad. Typically, right, as an opponent, they're usually bad, but, you know, we'll see. You know, advantage Red Sox, advantage Bayo. If you get a decent quality start and the bats don't go silent, I think those are the two that you can win. The third one is going to be the question mark. If Shohei Ohtani is going to pitch or is he not going to pitch? He's not going to pitch.
It is confirmed. He is not pitching this series.
Okay.
I saw it from ESPN asked Nevarez about facing Shohei Ohtani on the mound next series, but he is not going to be pitching. So that is confirmed.
Okay. Because I was going to say, my initial thought was is that he could be rusty, right? And so they're going to obviously monitor his workload, but it doesn't mean we're not going to see him in the batter's box. So. But the long and short of it is that I'm going to go two out of three in this series. That puts us at 4-5 for this stretch of nine games. I'm not excited about that, but I'm not going to throw my shoe through the television. So I think what that will do is that takes us all the way to the 27th. That Sunday will be the 27th. And then what happens is it's Breslow time. He's got 3 days to make some moves. And I think after the games are over on Sunday, that's a great time to start looking at doing something even Sunday night. So we will see how that all unfolds. But with that being said, I am going to call it for tonight. I'd like to thank Nick and Thayer for joining me. I'd also like to ask for everybody who is a listener to go ahead and subscribe to our digital product, which is located at RedSoxDigest.com. It's a free subscription. You can also donate to our cause and also become a founding member where we will put you on the podcast. So if you'd like to bitch and moan with us, we'd love to have you. Or if you want to just cut me, you can go ahead and do that as well. In any event, have a good day off tomorrow. We will be back here on Friday night to celebrate the Red Sox win. I'm calling it already. And we will see you then. Have a good night, everybody.